tomorrow. All the good now times are slipping away. Life is right now, and if you take it, your share will be the biggest amount. There's only one way to make it, that's making every minute count. Making every minute count, making it groovy, making love, making it now. If you know a better way of going, you know you better show me.
Finally I found, searching all around, just was not the answer. One I thought was true, looked a bit like you, I figured I might chance her. Hardly need to say, she went on her way, said it was all over.
And welcome back to PMP Network. With us right now is the lovely, the adorable, the incredible Elaine Spanky McFarlane. And you all remember Spanky and Our Gang. I love Spanky and Our Gang, and it was my pleasure to actually see the Happy Together tour when it was in town, and Spanky was singing with the Turtles and Gary Puckett and a number of other great people. That was an incredible experience. It must have been fun for you as well.
It was. How are you doing there, Mark?
I am doing incredibly well, but not as well as you, because you are Spanky McFarlane.
Well, just by virtue of that, that makes me adorable, I think you said.
Absolutely. More than adorable. In fact, as I think I mentioned this to you before, last time we spoke, that I still picture you in your little Navy outfit. that's my image of you.
It's been a while. I don't think it'll fit anymore.
You know, we're all 30 years older now, so.
That's true.
And that's the tough part. Even your fans are 30 years older as well, so.
That's true, and that's good.
Yeah, but I assume, though, when you do these tours that you get people who are younger there, too, who have heard the songs on all the oldie stations.
Well, yes, you know, their parents tortured them in their cradles and played our records for them, and so they're somewhere in their little memory storehouses. They remember these songs from when they were kids, and the kids would come too. Mm-hmm. They'd come with the parents, and everybody had a great time. That was a fun tour, that Happy Together 84.
Now, you actually have a little bit of a connection with the Turtles as well, not just from that tour, but I guess one of the members of Spanky actually joined the Turtles, right?
Yes. Our drummer, John Sider, after he left Spanky and Our Gang, he did join up with the Turtles. And my husband was, I believe he was their road manager for a while.
And he was your road manager as well.
Yes, exactly.
You married the roadie.
I did.
and also, another connection was the original Best of Spanky and Our Gang released by Rhino, the liner notes were by Howard Kalin.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Another connection with the Turtles.
Yes, we've been friends for many, many years.
It's a huge conspiracy here. Spanky and Our Gang Turtle Conspiracy, and we'll have that on the X-Files next week.
Okay.
That's another story. Tell us a little bit about your growing up, where you're from, and where did you get this musical talent from?
Well, I started singing when I was 3 years old. I always knew I wanted to sing, and I just pursued it all through school. I used to sing for every occasion, just mostly to get out of school, so I could say I had to go rehearse or something, you know. And, you know, everything that came up, I would sing. And my parents gave me voice lessons, and, you know, I sang all through school. And then I got out of school, and I was raised in Illinois, and I went to Chicago, started singing there in coffee houses and, you know, little nightclubs, and met some of my favorite people, mm-hmm. Little Brother Montgomery and Booker T. Washington and Wee Willie Dixon, and got to sing with them. And here I was like 18 years old, and they let me sing with them. It was a wonderful experience. And my my first recording was with Little Brother Montgomery on the Riverside label. It was kind of funny because Little Brother would bring a bottle, you know, every time he'd have a little bottle in his pocket of booze, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we were at this recording session, and everybody else was a little bit nervous, but of course he wasn't nervous at all. And so we saw that he had this bottle, and we thought, well, maybe if we all drink some, then Little Brother won't get so drunk, you know. So we all had some, and we all were just crocked, and he was just fine. But I remember I was hoarse that day, and we recorded a song called Oh Daddy, and it came out, I sounded like I was about 75 years old. But, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, it's all right, you know. Papa John Creech did it, you can do it.
Yeah.
He was 75 years old.
Probably.
You know, yeah, I also noticed that people have been emailing me, and the biggest question people wanted to know was, how did you get the name Spanky?
Well, I was in a group called the New Wine Singers in Chicago in the early 60s, and they used to come to my house to rehearse, and usually we'd stop rehearsal and watch the Little Rascals, you know, when they came on.
Right, our gang, yeah.
Yeah, and so they just started calling me Spanky, you know, because my last name was McFarlane. And I didn't particularly want the name, and I used to, you know, say, you know, I kind of fought it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Florida on a vacation, and I met Nigel and Oz, and I told them to come and visit me in Chicago if they were ever in the area. And they did, and I lived above a nightclub called Mother Blues on Wells Street. And one day, the manager, Curly Tate, came and told me that they needed an opening act on the following Tuesday. I think this was Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So Oz and Nigel and I got together, and we learned every song that each of us knew. I mean, we learned every song Nigel knew, and every song Oz knew, and every song I knew. And we put together this act, and we thought, well, we'll call it Spanky and Our Gang just for now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we got great reviews, and we kept the name.
Hmm.
And it stuck. And I'm very used to it now. I mean, I've been called that for about 35 years.
Yeah, so. I bet you almost nobody calls you Elaine anymore.
No, not too many people. My mother.
Yeah. What did your mother think of all this stuff?
Well, my mother was very proud of me, and, you know, she saw me on the Ed Sullivan Show, and her neighbors were calling it.
Hmm.
Then they had Spanky Day in Peoria, my hometown. I believe that, I think it was in 1968.
Boy, that must have been fun, huh?
It was pretty cool, yeah.
There's nothing like going back to your hometown and being a big hero.
That's right.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going back again in late October for a music festival. It's an all-girl festival called Mama Palooza.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to, I'm a guest artist at the Madison Theater on October 28th.
Cool. Well, people out there can check that out if you live down in that area.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is that I wanted to talk a little bit about the relationship. You mentioned Curly Tate. He
mm-hmm.
actually became your first manager as well, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy that got you signed to Mercury?
Well, yeah, we did. We signed with Mercury. I don't think he was managing us yet. We didn't know we needed a manager.
Uh-huh.
But then once we moved to New York, we took Curly with us, and we, you know, We did need management by then.
Now, the first song you guys did was a song that was rejected by the Mamas and Papas and Left Bank, of course, who did Walk Away Renee. And you guys took it. It was a song called Sunday Will Never Be the Same.
Mm-hmm.
And Spanky and Our Gang were never the same after that, were they?
Well, that's true. We put that little ba-da-da thing in the front, you know, and kind of put our signature on it, and I didn't realize it had gone to the Mamas and Papas for consideration, but I think they were doing mostly, you know, their original songs at that time.
Well, it's interesting, I mean, because Mamas and Papas and Left Bank both had that kind of, you know, the harmony type thing going as well.
Uh-huh.
And it might have worked for them as well, but I'm sure you're very happy that you guys got it.
Yes.
And the reason you got it was because of Jerry Ross.
Yes. That's right.
He was our first producer album, and he grabbed it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you heard that song for the first time and when you sang it for the first time, I understand you hit it right on the dot. You only did one take yourself on that.
Well, no, it wasn't that I just did one take on the singing. I sang it through, and I thought we were done, and they said, okay, Spanky, we want you to overdub.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, fine. What is that? I didn't even know what they meant, you know. I had no recording experience, you know, really. But I did do it. I overdubbed it, and it came out all right.
When you first heard it, did you think hip?
I didn't
have any idea.
I really didn't know, but it sounded pretty good to us. We were pretty happy with it.
Because I've always had this ability, and I've been a DJ for many years, to hear a song and know it was a big hit. And the first time I heard Sunday Will Never Be the Same, I knew that was going to be a big, big song. But I understand that another DJ by the name of Murray the K really took that song and made it a hit for you guys.
Yes, Murray the K was very big in New York, and usually it seemed like songs had to be kind of proven from California across the country before New York would actually play it. But we went to the radio station, we met him, and he really liked us, and he just jumped on that song, and he really made it a hit for us.
Mm. Now, the next hit you guys had was Making Every Minute Count,
mm-hmm.
which was a really nice song as well, real pretty song.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jerry Ross hired the guy who wrote 98.6 for Keith, George Fischoff and Tony Powers, and they wrote a song called Lazy Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand now, I want you to correct all this out, I understand that you thought that the lyrics were pretty stupid and didn't want to sing them.
Did I say that?
I'm squirrels saying hello, things like that.
Yeah.
It didn't rank for you too well.
No, I was looking for some music, you know, that had integrity and some things I really wanted to say, but I let them talk me into it, and we recorded it, and people loved it.
However, as far as I know, wasn't that the last collaboration you guys did with that group of songwriters?
Yes, and our last collaboration with Jerry Ross also.
Mm.
We had some friends, Stuart Sharp and Bob DeRoe, that we really wanted to work with, and then we just moved on to them for the next album, the Like to Get to Know You album.
Now, right after that is when Oz left the group, right?
Yes.
Well, tell me a little bit about Oz. He died at a very young age. He was only 59 years old.
Mm-hmm. He died.
We had his daughter on, Belinda, who's a lovely young lady.
Oh, you had her on already?
Yeah, she was on the show last week.
Oh, great.
And she got a nice little CD out, and she's a very talented young lady.
She is a sweetheart.
She's a very innocent-looking, sweet little angelic girl.
okay.
I'm not reflecting on her at all. I'm just telling you what you look like. But she's got that gothic look about her.
Uh-huh.
And tell us a little bit about her dad.
Her dad was one of the funniest, natural comic, you know, just naturally funny. When my girlfriend and I first went to Florida in 65, Oz was one of the first people we met in Coconut Grove. And he took us all around. He took us to this airplane graveyard where they had all these World War II planes, and we got in there, we were sitting inside the planes and stuff. He took us all over. He was a great tour guide, took us down to the Everglades, and he, you know, we were friends first. We never thought we'd ever be singing together, but as it happened, he and Nigel, you know, came up to Chicago, like I said,
mm-hmm.
found me, and we started the group.
What did you guys think when he left the group?
Well, we were saddened by that. It was, it was just one of those things that just, it's kind of hard to talk about now. I don't remember, you know, how it all went down now. But he left, and we got Kenny and Lefty.
Right. And Kenny did a nice job as well filling in.
Yes,
and
he did.
Lefty, too.
Mm-hmm. They were a songwriting team.
Yeah.
And they were friends of Nigel's, and it seemed like it took two people to replace Oz.
Yeah, and when you did, though, that's when Sunday Morning came out, right? With a six
yes,
six
finally
lineup.
We got to sing six-part harmony.
Yeah.
It was such a thrill.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of the Association, and they had all those great voices,
you know,
and all those wonderful parts, you know.
And one of the songs on the same album, in fact, it might have been the flip side of Sunday Morning, was Everybody's Talking.
Oh,
which
yes.
was later done by Harry Nilsson on the Midnight Cowboy soundtrack.
Right.
You guys did that first.
We did, and we got it from the source of Fred Neil, down in Coconut Grove was a friend of ours, and he gave us that song. And
nice song, too. I like that song. And,
yeah, it's a good one.
And Nilsson did a nice job on it as well.
He did.
And he had the luck of having it become huge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they were doing the album, I guess that Stu Scharf had to come up with a song real quick, and I understand he wrote, like to Get to Know You in like a couple hours.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that was one I didn't think it was going to be a commercial hit either. It didn't seem like it, you know, like that was possible, but we did love doing it, and it was a pretty good hit for us, too.
Yeah, well, you guys have quite a few hits, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all great songs. I just love the songs and the way that you guys harmonize, and part of it, of course, is you with that voice of yours. That spanky voice really made Spanky and Our Gang, obviously. Wouldn't have been the same without you.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah. It would have been just Our Gang.
That's true.
You know, when I was following a tour that was around, not the Happy Together tour, which I saw you at in person, but I missed the Mamas and Papas tour. I want to know how that all came about, that you went in there and, in essence, really replaced Mama Cass. I know that Mackenzie Phillips was kind of sitting in for her mother, and John and Denny were together. How did that all come about?
Okay, let's see. You know, Cass died in 74. And around that time, maybe 75 or 76, I had known Cass in the early 60s, and we stayed friends. And then their group broke up, I think, in 68 or 69. But I met Denny at a recording session at about the mid-70s. And we made this record called To Claudia on Thursday. And, you know, we got on really well in the studio, Denny and I, and it was a duet. And then he remembered this. John got in some trouble with the law in 1979 or 80, and he needed to have a real job again. So he and Denny decided to put the Mamas and Papas back together. Now, Michelle Phillips was not Mackenzie's mother. She was her stepmother.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, Michelle, I think maybe was doing Knott's Landing or something at that time, and she wasn't interested in doing the music again. So John's daughter, Mackenzie, stepped up to the plate, and of course they needed a fourth for bridge. So Denny remembered me and called me, and that's how that happened in 1981.
I understand you guys were doing it at first a lot of new songs, and it kind of changed when you went on the road. You were pretty much
doing right. Stuff. We rehearsed actually for a whole year before we ever played or went on the road, and we wrote some songs together and had some great stuff that John had written in the 70s, and we learned all these songs, and then we went out to play, and we realized that people wanted to hear the hits.
Mm.
So we had to go back in and, you know, get those hits down.
When you were doing the Mamas and Papas tour, were they letting you do all the Spanky and Our Gang music as well?
Well, not all of it, but they certainly featured me doing some Spanky and Our Gang hits,
yeah.
Which was really nice.
Yeah, I would think that would make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that actually a lot of people who came to the tours knew who you were and wanted to hear your music as well.
Well, it seemed like it.
And a lot of that music kind of melds. You know?
Yes. And, you know, they'd sing with me. They'd put the little... their little Mamas and Papas stuff into our songs, too, and it was fun, and I always loved the Mamas and Papas music. Always loved it.
Well, I don't know about you. Maybe it's just prejudice on my part, but I've always loved the music of the mid-60s to early 70s and thought that was the best music ever put out. And I'm not sure if it's my age or if it really was, but if you think about all the great music that was out during that period, it's just amazing.
Oh, I know. Simon and Garfunkel and, you know, like I said, the Association and the Love and Spoonful. And
then you go to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Oh, sure.
All the Bee Gees. All this music that
was
out. Just amazing. And of course, you know, even at Joni Mitchell and Judy Collins and all that type of music.
Mm-hmm.
It was just really good stuff. Gary Puckett and Union Gap. And
yes,
the Turtles.
Gary still has a wonderful voice.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Guy's got pipes that you won't believe. Yeah. It's funny, though, when we saw him in concert, the first song he was kind of weak, and as the night wore on, his voice got back. And boy, oh boy, same instrument he had before.
I know. He can really put it out there.
Wow. You know, I understand also that I wanted to get confirmation on this because I don't want to spread false rumors, but someone told me that you guys actually did a country album at one point with the influence of Willie Nelson.
Yes, in the 70s. I had retired from music and was in Topanga raising my children, and Nigel was living in Spain, and he finally came back, and we started singing in my living room, and the people started coming over, and it was just getting too crowded, so we had to move down the road to this wonderful place in Topanga called the Corral, this great bar that a lot of people, you know, the Canned Heat had played at, and Spirit, and all these groups that lived around Topanga.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Young played there, and you know, when the Rolling Stones were in town, they'd come and play, and it was just a great bar. So many memories for the Corral, and we started playing there. And you know, in the 70s, it was either heavy metal or disco, and I couldn't do either one of those. So I got pretty attached to country music, and not the kind, you know, that. We did do some classics. We'd do Tennessee Waltz and San Antonio Rose and stuff, but we kind of did them our way, you know. And we took the band and we went to one of Willie's picnics in 1974 to College Station there in Texas, and we got to play. We met Willie and we played with him on that concert that night, and he became a friend of mine and the groups, and we played all through Texas, and we made an album on Epic. And it was called Change, and it's great. I must say, I love that album.
It
got
Tennessee,
some wonderful things.
Tennessee
on
Waltz
it.
Is on that one, I know that.
No, Tennessee Waltz didn't make the cut.
No.
Even though it was great. We made an album in Nashville. With Chip Young out in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, outside of Nashville. And then we brought it to Epic, and they said, well, they didn't like the fact that there were guys singing lead, guys in the band, you know, because we give everybody a chance, you know, if we liked the song. It didn't matter to me who sang the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So then they made us go back in and recut some things, and because Mark McClure was singing the lead on Tennessee Waltz, that one, you know, didn't make the cut. We still have it on tape, and we all love it and listen to it often, but it didn't make it to the Change album. They wanted me singing the lead on everything.
Johnny Gimble was on that too, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is what the liner notes say from the best of Spanking Our Gang. It says, Epic Records signed the new Countrified Gang and sent them to Chip Young's state-of-the-art studio in Nashville to record the LP Change with players like Johnny Gimble and featuring tunes like the Tennessee Waltz.
Mm-hmm. Well, no.
I love liner notes.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, you know.
And what was that? What was that on?
That was the one that Howard Kalin wrote.
Oh,
Best of Spanking
Our Gang. Well, he probably got to hear that, you know.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting though when that happens, isn't it? And it also says, of course, that Mackenzie mentioned that she's kind of Michelle's daughter too. But
she is.
I know that she's not though.
Stepdaughter. Yeah.
She is her stepdaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's amazing what you can read though if you read liner notes.
I know. I mean, you can really get it pretty messed up.
You can't even get messed up. Or you can get a lot of information that many times I'll do an interview, and the people I interview have no idea that, you know, what the liner notes say.
Well, that's true, and that would be true of me. I mean, I probably haven't read that liner note that Howard Kalin wrote since it came out, you know?
Mm-hmm. I understand also.
My memory's not quite what it used to be.
Let me ask you, since you mentioned the children, and I know that you took off some time to raise Matthew in D.C., I was wondering if either one of them is musically inclined like Mom.
Well, they both are musically inclined. D.C. is an actress down in Hollywood and a model, and my son is a drummer, and they're both musical. He plays a lot of instruments, my son does. But they haven't pursued music as a career.
Is DC anywhere we can see at this point in acting?
She gets a lot of, walk-ons and things like that. She's working on it, though. Mm. She just made a video of her own comedy. She's pretty funny. Mm. And so she just called me the other day. She said, Mom, I finished it. She was so proud of that.
Mm. Well, maybe we should have her on the show, too.
You should.
Yes, we had.
It'd be fun to interview.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that. You can set that up if you like.
Okay.
And have her get in touch with me. That'd be kind of cool. I want to talk a little bit about Malcolm Hale as well.
Okay.
I understand that at one point you guys were in concert, and tell me about this, the night that he passed away. What happened at the concert?
Well, we had all taken a holiday. We'd just finished the Hollywood Palace television show in L.A., and everybody kind of went their separate ways. Malcolm went to Chicago, and I think I stayed in L.A., and then we were supposed to meet the following, I think it was Tuesday, in Boise, Idaho, for a concert. And Malcolm was in the National Guard, the reserves, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so we had done... In the past, we had done some concerts without him because he was, had to go do Army duty. But this was not scheduled to be one of them. He was supposed to be there, and he didn't come, and we're on stage, and, you know, we're doing the concert, and we're thinking, gee, where's Malcolm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with Malcolm? And his amp was there in case he showed up, you know? It was on stage, and it let off this terrible feedback for a minute or two during the concert, and, you know, we got that under control, and it was all just kind of a strange feeling, and we came off stage, and the look on our road manager's face was like he was white as a ghost, and he took Nigel aside, and he'd gotten the news, and he told us, and we were very shocked that, you know, anybody as healthy and robust as Malcolm could have died, you know.
He died of walking pneumonia, too, which
yeah,
is something that nowadays is easily cured.
Right.
Yeah,
he didn't know
sad.
He had it, you know, and he went to sleep and never woke up.
Now, the liner notes tell me that during the song Brother Can You Spare a Dime, where he would be doing his trombone solo, eerily, the screeching feedback came on at that moment.
That's probably when it was, yeah.
Mm. That's really weird.
It is weird, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is not explained easily.
No.
Hmm.
But we didn't know yet, so.
Hmm. I want to know a little bit about your take on fame. Having number one hits, being on the top of the charts for so long, and then kind of like going out of sight for a while. What did you go through in terms of yourself and your value to yourself? And
well. Fame is not all it's cracked up to be. I mean, it's nice to be... I never appreciated the fact that, you know, I was recognized if I went somewhere and I would be recognized. I mean, now, when I went with the Mamas and Papas, it was fine because nobody really recognized me. I think I looked a lot different or something. And until after the show. And after the show, then we couldn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But before the show, I could remain anonymous and, you know, go out or do anything I wanted to do, go shopping or whatever it was that I wanted to do. And, you know, the Mamas and Papas, for instance, we'd all be at the airports, and Mackenzie Phillips was so recognizable. Everybody in the airport, you could hear him talking about her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't all, you know, stick together and go through the airport at the same time. We'd all meet at the gate whenever, and sometimes I'd be behind her, and I'd hear all these people making the comments about her, you know, and they weren't always kind, and I thought, boy, I hope I never get that recognizable, you know.
That's what TV does to you.
Yeah, really.
One day at a time is what did that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the stories about her drug use and things like
that. Yes, and, you know, everybody had their opinion of her, you know. And they'd be nice to her face, and then the minute she'd move on, they'd be talking about her, you know, not always kindly.
No.
So I thought, well, this is not good.
No, I think extreme fame is very tough. I wouldn't want it.
No.
But it's
not
also
to be recognized everywhere you go. It'd be a pain.
It's also something in this country, I don't know what it is, and it is a United States type of thing, where people want to bring you to the top, and then they want to kick you in the butt and get you out of there.
What is that?
I don't know.
I always thought that was the media did that. You know, they help build you up, and then you get there, and then they want to find something wrong and pick you apart. I don't get that.
Yeah, the media certainly plays a part in it and inspires the people to act like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it even happens in sports, it happens in entertainment, it happens in everything.
It's like you get up there and then they're waiting for you to make one false move or something, you know, so they can drag you down. I don't know. I can't explain that.
I can't either. People wanted me to ask when you're going on the road again and where they can see you.
Well, I don't travel anymore. I'm pretty much retired. but I occasionally will do some things. I played with Willie Nelson in Austin in June, and then I'm doing this thing, like I said, October 28th in Madison, at the Madison Theater in Peoria, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
my hometown.
That's about it then, huh?
Well, that's all I have planned for now.
Boo.
I'm sorry.
I was hoping you'd come on the East Coast so we could see you.
Thank you.
Right. You know, can I end this interview with this? Could you join me in this? You ready? You know, you didn't join me. What a bummer.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, here we go.
Oh, this is terrible.
Thank you very much. Aren't you lucky you didn't have to sing with me when you were touring?
Couldn't be all that bad now.
Well, you are wonderful. I'm thrilled that I had a chance to talk with you. And if you have any new things happening or if you want to have your daughter call, we'd love to talk to her as well.
Well, thank you, Mark. Why don't I give you her phone number?
Okay. Why don't you do that in a second? Let me say goodbye first, and then
okay.
I'll pick up and take that, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for talking with us, Spanky.
All right.
Take care.